this is Carolyn here with Inspired Me. I'm going to be chatting with Debbie Bridge today about what inspires her and all about the heart-centered work that she offers. Mm-hmm. So, welcome, Debbie.
Hello.
Yeah. So, let's just dive right into it and start with just telling me a little bit about yourself and what inspires you to do the work that you do. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm married. I've been married for 21 years, and I have two teenage children. So that right there brings a lot of triggers and a lot of places where I disconnect with myself and get frustrated and worried and all of those things. And that's basically the place that I was living in all of the time about 5 years ago. Spent a lot of time finding some corner of my house crying, believing that, you know, my husband's mean to me, that we're not attached, that I don't know how we're going to make it, these kinds of fearful thoughts. And then a friend handed me a book, Loving What Is by Byron Katie. And yes, and I didn't read it right off the bat. I kind of just put it there. And so I ended up finding it on Audible, which I just loved, because there's a lot of dialogues in that book, and so I love listening to the dialogues live. And I could really relate to a lot of the stories that were in there. So she was helping people see that what they thought they were a victim of their life, they really weren't. All the problems they thought were out there were actually being generated within. And so, and then I got obsessed watching two videos, but I didn't actually do any of the process until one day my daughter, who was 13 at the time, she came home from a school program and she was crying because she'd had an argument with a girl. And she was laying on her bed and I was in her room. And I really fancied myself the kind of mother who was someone their children could talk to. In fact, that was a mantra ever since my kids were little, is I was going to be the mother that their kids could talk to. Because I believed I couldn't talk to mine. So there I am standing in her room and I'm thinking I have all this great wisdom to share. I'm this mother that can rescue my child through this, and she didn't want a single iota of it. In fact, she asked me to leave her room. And all of the years of watching Oprah, all the self-help books, all those wonderful tools that I'd learned went out the window. Because in those moments when we're believing something like, my children should listen to me, that's what takes you over. And that's what took me over in that room. And instead of coming from a heart-centered place, I yelled at her. You know, I guess that there. I know nothing. You know, I'm 40 and I've never been through this. So just figure it out on your own.
I've been there with my 9-year-old. So I
exactly.
know.
Like all of our great teachings just go out the window in those moments of stress. You know? Yeah. And so I stormed out of her room and shut the door and felt like a complete failure as a mother. Because I knew that what I wanted was connection with her, and I just didn't know how to make it happen. So luckily, because of all the YouTube videos I'd watched and the book I was reading, I sat down and did the process of the work. And through that, I noticed that when I'm believing that she should listen to my wisdom, that I'm not listening to her. I'm not present for her. It's more important to me to be the great mom, the rescuer, the mom that helps, than it was to really just sit down and connect with my child. And to not even have to say a single thing, to just sit there and rub her back. And so I shared that with her. I shared, Julia, look, this is what I noticed, that I did not listen to you that day. And we stayed up till 2 a.m. talking.
Are you gonna make me cry?
And she said things like, I'm telling you things I can't even share with a friend. And for a mother of a teenager, it's what I call a magical moment.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And the work brought me to that. And so then I was hooked after that.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, you finally got to achieve your childhood dream of becoming the mom that you can talk to.
So, well, and even that has progressed. There's been a journey, you know, of a teenage girl and a teenage boy as well, that I also had to release that expectation of her telling me everything. You know, she's allowed her private life. So the work just keeps showing me all these places to release these stories that I think is the ideal mother, the ideal relationship. And it keeps bringing me back home to myself, letting go of these agendas on my family. So they are my inspiration. It's my husband and my children, because I want a connected, authentic, heart-centered relationship with them. And you usually that involves me just getting out of the way.
Yeah. And sometimes zipping it.
Most of the time zipping it.
Yeah.
Especially as they get older.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just had the exact same experience with my son yesterday, and I did not do the work. I just said, why aren't you telling me what's going on? And every time, and this is my daughter stepped in, she said, Mom, I think he needs some quiet time. Maybe he'll talk to you later. And then, ding! Okay, so my 9-year-old is, she can do it.
They're the best teachers.
So, yes.
Okay,
fantastic. So next question is, where do you find your inspiration? So is it from people or resources or work?
Well, what I'll say is initially it started with the School for the Work. So I went down to California and did the 9-day School for the Work with Byron Katie. Now, not everybody needs to do that, but I was in that place of suffering. And after that first worksheet with my daughter, where I really saw those things, I just noticed I needed to learn more. But the funny thing is I was still coming from the place of the self-improvement project, the Debbie self-improvement project.
Right, there's something wrong.
There's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the School for the Work with this idea that I'm going to get fixed there. I'm going to find these tools. And what I found was something radically different. I believe it changed my brain, actually, because I came away with a completely different outlook on life.
Yeah.
You know, that there's nothing to improve here. And so then, because of that experience with the school, I was able to develop a community. So I have partners, regular partners that I do the work with. I run to any workshop that I can that's offered through the work and others. I'm starting to find other avenues, but if there's anybody in the city or nearby doing the work, then I run to it. So like, for instance, Tom Compton, who's one of my favorite facilitators, he's offering a workshop coming up in Vancouver in May, and I just can't wait to go. I did an, he's so good. Mm. You would love him. I did the immersion program with Innerland Institute. And so that was a way to bring the work into my daily life. But I'm greedy. I don't want to wait for these workshops.
Yeah.
So I've started offering them myself.
That's not greedy.
I'm greedy for peace.
Yes.
I'm greedy for peace.
Well, you're also now of service. And now you are shining your light as that inspiration.
Yes, and but I have to be honest that I love seeing people who show up at the workshops who maybe never done this kind of work before and see huge insights into their life. That it gives me such a thrill. And I'm also doing it selfishly because I need this work. I'm not some, you know, enlightened, finished being.
Yes.
You know, so the work, me offering them through workshops is a way to keep that in my life. So I would say the people who show up in my workshops are a huge part of my inspiration. Huge part. Because those stories ring in my mind. In fact, so I was just at a workshop recently, and there a girlfriend, I don't want to say drug him there, but he came along, her boyfriend, and he'd never done this kind of work before. And he took my invitation to do some serious work on his partner, and he wrote about how she doesn't give him back rubs and all this sort of thing. What we noticed halfway through the work, it wasn't back rubs he was craving, it was affection. But he wasn't even aware of it.
Yes.
So, you know, when we learn these things in these books, you know, ask for what you need. What do you need to know first before you ask for what you need?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need to check in.
You need to check in.
And know what you need.
Yes.
But he thought what he needed was back rubs.
Or work your way backwards, which is what the work is all about,
yes.
Right? Like you work with the presenting problem,
yes,
and then you will always find the source.
Exactly. And the source for him was that he had a lack of affection inside of him, that he didn't know how to express, he didn't know how to talk about it because he hadn't connected with it.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing moment for this couple. They're sitting there on the couch and they're both like, I didn't know that's what it was about.
Wow.
And I was like, yes! Like, this is just, it gave me such a rush.
Yeah. Well, and what you said really resonated. You're saying, you know, I do this work for myself. One, that's what all creators do. We create for ourselves. Our greatest creations are almost like little treasures, little buried treasures that need to be voiced.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it feels like freedom, you're on the right path. Right? And that's how I didn't used to. I used to think that struggle was the way to go and that you really needed to work hard and buckle down. But now, if it doesn't taste like freedom, it isn't enlightenment. It is not the path.
Yes. Yeah, all these to-dos we put on ourselves, mm-hmm. all these needs to be productive, yes. and this kind of thing. Yeah. And the thing is, when you release that, you become more invigorated,
yeah.
which leads to this productivity thing,
absolutely.
But it just sort of happens from within you,
yeah.
rather than any external things you put on yourself.
So, can you walk me through
yeah,
our process?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Did you want it with about your son the other day?
Oh, sure. Okay, so this might get a little emotional, but I'm totally down for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, coming up with a statement first, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the situation?
Well, so, I don't know exactly what led us to the situation, but we went to go to Wawa and couldn't find his snow pants. He left them at his dad's house. And he's not one who really likes when things don't go exactly the way that he wants them to go. So anyways, we went out, my daughter and I were in our snow pants and he wasn't. So we get to this little toboggan hill that we were at, and he just started crying and just started getting very upset. And I was questioning him about it. What's going on? Like, Eric, how are you feeling? What's bothering you? And he just said, I don't want to talk about it. And I said, well, you really need to talk about it. And of course, I'm diving into that that idea that you don't want to bottle up this emotion. I almost had fear around him keeping everything inside and then that causing harm. And like, I could just see the anger building in him. And finally, I just had to step back, but not before pushing him. So I was really pushing him. So that's the situation. And then, of course, later, like, when he goes to bed, he comes and gives me this sweet hug and tells me that he loves me. And it's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all gone. But that moment was...
Well, that's a wonderful point you brought up, Carol, because so often there's some situations that are recurring and are just constant in our lives. And it's very obvious that we might want to look at those closer. And then there's these little hits that happen through our day that seem to fizzle out, and you go on with your day and you say it's over. However, there are little things that drop you out of heaven throughout the day. You know, and then we wonder why at night we want to flick on Netflix or eat or
turn off
in some way, because we've had these little hits to our peace all throughout the day.
Yes.
And so for me, the invitation isn't so much to go back and fix that, because it resolved itself. It's to get close to what was it in me that was enough to drop me out of pure joy and loving what is in that moment. And that educates me about me. And the closer I can become to me, it just over time, those hits become less and less, you know? So one of the things I heard, one of the things that I like to do is to zero on what emotion were you feeling? And I heard you say the word fear.
Fear, yes.
And so you were afraid because?
I was afraid because he was bottling his emotions.
So in that moment, I just invite you to go back to that moment. This is a meditative process of going back to that situation. I kind of like the work it talks, for me it's like time travel. So you go back to that moment and see him there. And by the way, anyone who's listening, I'll bet you can all see Carolyn there at the snow hill there, the sledding hill. And so I just invite you to travel along with us. So he's bottling up his emotions. Is that true?
I can't say with all honesty that it is.
So I just invite you to settle on a yes or a no.
No.
And so that's the first question of the work. Is that true? Now, if you had answered yes, we would have gone to the second question, which is, can you absolutely know that that's true? Which is sounds like just a repeat of the first one, but it's amazing how that can you absolutely know just opens you up a little bit more. But you settled on a no, so we're going to go to the third question, which is, how do you react in that moment? Happens when you believe he's bottling up his emotions?
Oh my goodness. Well, it brings up so much tension and fear in me, and reminders of how I bottled up my emotions and the harm that it's done. So yeah, I become very fearful and constricted and actually start to lash out at him. So I become angry and sad. It's a whole plethora of emotions that drop me right out of that joy.
Mm-hmm.
Going from having a fantastic time with my son to just total disconnect.
Yeah, and when you're believing he's bottling up his emotions, what aren't you able to notice in that moment?
I'm not able to notice the perfection of that moment. I'm not able to notice the lessons available. I'm not able to notice him exactly as he is, who he is. So I stopped seeing him for who he is, and pretty much just a reflection of me.
So then the fourth question is where we use our imagination a little bit. And we look at that same situation. Everything's the same. He's still crying. But this time, who would you be in that same situation without the thought that he's bottling up his emotions?
I would be a listener. So I would actually be receptive. I would be very receptive to what's happening. I would be having fun. You know, I dropped right out of fun. I would be right back into having a good time, and I wouldn't feel so stuck. So it would be very flowing. Yeah, I'd feel almost an immediate sense of flow and movement and peace.
And how do you think you would treat him now without the thought that he's bottling up his emotions?
Deep patience. There would be no expectation. So patience and respect. Respect for his journey and his emotions. I would treat him as an equal. The respect is the big one.
Something we parents want all the time is respect. So those are the four questions. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? Who would you be without that thought? I asked a couple little varying, what we call sub-questions underneath, but mostly it's just those four questions we're bringing home. So then the next part of the work is a turnaround. So it's a way of looking at that thought, that story we have, and sort of flipping it, looking at the opposites. And there's a few different ways we can do it, but one of them is just the direct opposites. He's bottling up his emotions.
Yeah.
He's not bottling
up his
emotions.
He's not bottling up his
emotions.
How is that true? Well, he doesn't even understand his emotions, so how could he possibly bottle them?
Right.
So it's just not even a possibility. So he's not bottling them up because he doesn't understand them. He's not bottling them up because he's crying.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah, that's an emotional release. Yeah, okay. Oh my goodness, I just saw that one.
There he is crying, bottling up his emotions.
Oh wow, that's hilarious. Do I need to say anything more for that one, or is that good?
If it's enough for you, generally the invitation is to find three genuine examples of each turnaround, and primarily that's because that's the rewiring that's going on. We go through life believing these things, so the more examples we can find of the opposite.
Right. So we need to find proof.
How it's true that he's not bottling up his emotions.
Okay.
And so sometimes you need to just sit and let life show you those examples instead of coming from here. Let the answers come from somewhere else.
This is that heart-centered part
you've
been talking about.
Exactly. He's not bottling up his emotions.
This one I'm stuck on.
So you see that he's crying. Bottling up emotions is probably one of our adult constructs.
It's not even within his language or his concept of self. If it's not something that's even possible for him, then how could he possibly do it?
And so sometimes in the turnarounds they do feel a little sticky, and they're meant to be like a kiss. So sometimes when we find these, they could feel a little stressful, they can feel a little especially like one with disrespect. Mm-hmm. You know, my child is disrespecting me, and if I get to the turnaround and I'm disrespecting my child, you could really wake up to actually where the pain is coming from, and you start to see yourself clearly. Mm-hmm. And if you notice that you're giving yourself a hard time through this process, that's where gentleness is invited. Compassion for yourself. You know, and that's why it's important to do these four questions first. Because by the time you get to the turnarounds, you're able to see.
You've opened.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's move on to another turnaround, which is to the self.
Yes.
So
I am bottling up my emotions. I wasn't crying.
Right.
I was using anger, which for me is always a sign that underneath is sadness.
So how were you specifically bottling up sadness or fear?
Well, I was choosing not to express, so I was projecting onto him rather than sharing how I was feeling. So I was trying to label his feelings and draw them out, but I wasn't expressing it at all.
That's a huge one.
A very, very big one. Yeah.
And what's the process that happens? You have that fear bottling up. What's that look like inside when you're doing
it? Oh my goodness, I can physically see it. Like, I can see the color of it and the stickiness of it, and it just gets stuck right between my heart and my solar plexus. Yeah. Like, just in that area, and it becomes, hard. Like a knot. It's just putting everything into a knot.
Mm-hmm. It's reminding me of that tantra workshop you and I went to, the energy knots.
Yes. I've been doing quite a few of the meditations, and it's been the most powerful in teasing apart the knots.
So this is one example of where you can tease apart those energy knots and just notice. For me, I like to really feel my way through these turnarounds. They can become kind of intellectual, you know. Oh, okay, how do I bottle up my emotions?
Yes.
Oh yes, that's how I'm doing it. That's how, and you just move on.
Yeah.
And it's not that that's no use, but the way I find that it actually makes a lasting lasting effect in my life is to really slow down and feel me in that moment. I see there of my son, he's crying, he's having a hard time, all of a sudden I'm uncomfortable, and I bottle those up. That's that constriction. Really see me doing that. And how that disconnects me from my own heart.
Oh my goodness. Oh, and it makes me nauseous. Like, just thinking about it immediately, it's like I want to release, but I'm not letting myself.
Mm-hmm.
So as though the nausea will induce the release of emotion.
Yeah, and when we have that feeling inside, instead of being with us, that's when we like, must fix everybody around me so that I don't feel this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and when we come home to ourselves and notice, oh, I've got an emotion. First of all, I have to notice that I have an emotion. I'm in an emotional response. I'm feeling afraid. I'm afraid for him. I don't want him to have, see the innocence and the beauty in that?
Yeah.
Where it's coming from is that you're just trying to be there for your son and spare him the pain that you've had.
Yes. Oh, wow.
It's confusion.
Yeah.
What this work shows you is how we're walking around in confusion. So just to finish it up, the last turnaround, this is interesting. I'm bottling up his emotions. This is the turnaround to the other.
Oh, how? I can see that one immediately because I'm basically taking his emotions and putting them into my little bottle. I'm not letting him have his expression. I'm not letting him cry. I'm not allowing that process. I'm not allowing him to be sad or angry. I'm wanting them to be in my bottle, and I want it. I want to keep it so that he doesn't have to. Oh, that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one.
Yeah, and so if we were to write what we call a worksheet on that, we would start to notice a whole bunch of underlying beliefs that's holding that one up.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get your prescription for happiness. You would get your very direction on how to live, I want to say differently, just how to bring this work into your life.
Yeah.
So, you know, like underneath there is a want. I want him to freely express himself.
Yeah.
I want me to freely express myself. He should get in touch with what's really going on for him. I I should get in touch with what's really going on for me.
It's interesting. And ego thing is tricky.
Yes. Oh, well, and it's just like, oh my goodness, what's the lady who taught the Tantra workshop?
Amanda.
So what I loved, what I took away from this workshop that Carol and I went to, is that she talks about these energy knots and how it's like, you know, this knot of string or whatever, and you start pulling on this one and the side gets tight, and then maybe the whole thing starts to feel loose and you're like, ooh, I'm getting somewhere. And then you pull on the string and then, oh, it all tightens up again. So for me, the work is sort of my mainstay, but really, you know, meditation, there's so many ways. She said you need several practices.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, one thing is just not enough. And who's to say that one practice it doesn't actually rely or get better when you have others?
Well, I mean, and that leads me to what you were asking about my inspiration for continuing, is that what I've been noticing is the work is pointing me to other practices. So let's say I have the thought that, you know, my husband should love me more or care about me. And so then the turnaround, I need to care about me. And when I first started to see those turnarounds, I was like, oh yeah, I need to care about me. And then I just sort of left it there. And then, you know, as these things keep coming up in our lives, same kind of work, I kept hearing I need to care about me. Well, how do I care about me? I don't know.
So
turned out.
This is the self-care question, right? So how do you care about me?
Well, I'm learning. It turns out that, you know, for 40 years of my life, I didn't know how to love myself. I didn't know how to care about myself. I didn't know how to be there for me, to respect me. You know, we go around with these rules for life. People should be considerate. I should be considerate of me. Well, how do I do that? And it's so often in my workshops, I'll ask the person, so, how would you do that? And they go, well, I don't know. But yet you expect everyone else to do it for you. And you don't even know what it looks like.
No. You don't even know what to ask for.
You don't know what to ask for, and you could be getting it all day long, but you don't even notice it. Actually, I was working with a lady in a coffee shop, and she had the belief that her husband wasn't supporting her, and like emotionally. And when we went through the work, she started to say, he wakes up every morning and says how much he loves her. He texts her throughout the day. She wasn't seeing that as support. In fact, in the middle of our conversation, he texted her, hey babe, just thinking about you, hope you're having a great day.
Wow.
And I'm like, support. Now, feel that as support. Take that in as support.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was supported. And I'm supported by this table, by this chair, by this breath, by this beautiful environment, by you wanting to talk. That's all support.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we're blind to that. So how do I care about myself? Or care for myself. The work is my primary way because it brings me home to me. It brings me home to me. And now I'm just noticing it's pointing me to other things. So I'm just open. Oh, a Tantra workshop, and I actually have the weekend available. It's my birthday. That's the perfect time to go.
Yeah.
So that's one example of self-care. Going for walks outside, I notice I need to be in nature. That really grounds me. It lifts my spirit. There's just a variety of ways. As soon as I'm open, I notice there's opportunities to care for me all through my day.
Yes. It doesn't have to be the same thing all the time. But rather, I love what you were saying, you know, it's about compassion. And so to me, self-care is compassion. And so every time I have an opportunity to be compassionate, that's self-care.
Yeah. Now, how could you have taken care of yourself sitting there at the sledding hill with your son?
This might sound a little harsh, but I could have totally ignored him and just kept.
That's not harsh. You know, like the three kinds of business, my business, your business, and God's or reality's business. Getting out of everybody's business,
and back into mine.
Coming back into mine is an immense source of self-care for me.
Right. And I noticed even there I had this idea that self-care is selfish. And this is something that I've worked with over and over and over again, but it's sneaky. It comes back in funny ways.
It's those old teachings, you know. We want to be nice. We want to be good people.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere in an article that being nice is a coping mechanism, which is kind of interesting. But anyway,
I agree 100%.
Yes.
I recall the day when I was in junior high and decided that my thing would be to be nice, because that would mean people would like me. And that was going to be my personality. I recall it being starting the coping mechanism.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, you recall it so clearly. Yeah. What were you believing in that moment that you had to implement some kind of personality?
I just believed I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't accepted.
Yeah. Right there. So a lot of times we work on these surface conscious thoughts that we have. People should listen to us, they should include us. And when we start really sitting in the work, not doing it with our head, really allowing life to show us what's really going on, thoughts like I'm not good enough, I don't matter, those ones really start to show themselves to us. And those are the roots.
Oh, what a gift.
Yeah.
And what a gift the difficult emotions are then that arise.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I've even questioned, I'm sad, is that true? And what's fascinating about that is I notice who I am without the thought that I'm sad. See, the word sad, mm-hmm. I know the whole story of sad.
Yeah.
I know, it must mean that I'm at a loss or, you know. But without the story of sad, I'm actually curious mm-hmm. and I notice a bodily sensation.
Mm.
You know, I notice how it feels in my heart, and I'm curious about it, and I let it move. Mm. So as soon as I pinned it down to a label, it's like it stops.
Yeah, that's bottling it up.
That's bottling it up, exactly. Yeah. Right? Even thinking you know what your son feels, mm-hmm. that you bottled it right there. Yeah. He's upset, he's disappointed, whatever it is you think he's feeling, mm-hmm. that's stopping it.
Yeah.
And emotions are meant to flow through us in movement. And if we let them move, they go through with actually in a matter of minutes.
And that this is another takeaway from that course with Amanda, but when she said that emotion is energy in motion, and I've heard that, but it didn't sink in until that moment. And I've said it to other people, but it wasn't until I actually felt it, I felt the energy moving, and that the emotion, because it's a very emotional experience to go through these courses and workshops. But I felt that move, and then I was like, oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I've given it permission, compassion to be what it is, and look at it go. Look at it move, and then all I don't know if it's dissipating or integrating or what it is. Mm. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Not my business.
Right.
But, yeah, it's emotion, energy.
I love that you said that because I was in an experience. I was in a drumming, rhythmic drumming massage circle thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a circle and women were using their hand drums and drumming up and down you. And it was in this beautiful temple. It was an amazing experience. And I was being drummed on and it was, and the whole sound was vibrating within this
mm-hmm.
temple. And I started to feel myself get very emotional. Like I wanted to cry. Right away, my thinking brain was like, oh, I wonder what this is from. Is this an old hurt coming up? I wanted to label it. I wanted to pin it down. I wanted to understand it. And then something came in that just said, not my business, just let it go.
Mm.
And this emotion just moved through me, and I just started to weep. And it felt so wonderful. And I still don't know what it is. Couldn't it just be emotion? Like, that's all it was, you know? And it was an amazing transforming experience, just for me to experience not having to label this emotion. There's nothing wrong with labeling to understand.
Yeah.
It's just
we intellectualize.
Yes.
We don't label always to understand. We often label to put it in a box.
Yes.
And to feel in control.
Yeah.
So I get it. And that's why we're having this interview.
Yeah.
Because I'm fascinated by what really comes from the heart, what motivates from the heart rather than the mind, because our mind is this wonderful, beautiful tool, and yet it is not the only part of us, and we so often forget about the heart and forget about the intelligence. The intelligence of our heart and our connection, it connects us. It's like this, I don't even know how to describe it other than an energetic center that connects us to God, connects us to God's work, you know? And that's where I receive the messages. I don't receive the messages up here.
No.
So, yeah. Beautiful.
Yes. And that's, you know, again, sometimes I can get caught up in these kinds of practices and start believing that it's about, you know, the mind is wrong, the mind's trying to trick me, you know, go at war with the mind. And I just keep hearing, I was just listening to Byron Katie on a podcast on the way here, and this man said to her, so it's, you know, it's about getting rid of these thoughts. And she goes, we're just noticing they're not real.
Mm.
you know, bringing them in, meeting our minds with understanding and compassion. It's not about saying that it's wrong or that the ego is some evil thing. It's about what you were saying, I don't know, integrating it or bringing us into wholeness.
Right. And realizing that we are whole. That this healing, this concept of healing is even incomplete because we are already whole.
Oh. Except when we forget
the except for when we forget. And that's why we need the reminder.
Right.
Like the work. And that's what I think really draws certain people to this heart-centered work, is to shine light on this opportunity to return home.
Yes. You know, I'm just having this conversation with someone today. And a lot of times, I don't know if you find this, when you start sharing this kind of work with somebody, I can recognize that there's this resistance to that. Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, I don't want to do yoga all the time. I don't want to meditate all the time. That sounds like a lot of work. And indeed, there's some work in it. And yet, you're blind to the work that it takes to be in pain.
Oh my goodness.
The efforting we put into being sad and upset and resentful. That is work. Me being in my room crying and feeling like a victim of my life, that took work.
But it's familiar.
It's familiar work.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is work, but it's a lot less work than you might think, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It only takes one step of courage. One step of courage to try it, right? And to see, feel the relief. You don't even have to intellectualize it. You will feel the difference. And if it feels like freedom, you're on the right
path.
So
I love
coming
that.
Back to that.
Yeah, I love that.
So next question I'd love to ask, and something that fascinates me, because I've really struggled with creating one, is all about morning routine. So what is your morning routine? How do you set the stage for your day?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just telling Carolyn that she was telling me about these questions ahead of time. I'm like, oh no, morning routine.
Yeah.
You know? So my morning routine looks like getting up at about 7 in the morning and taking my daughter the bus every day.
Yeah.
Because she goes to a school in the city, grown in Anchorage. So what I love about my morning routine, and I'm open for some improvement of it, but right now what it does is, if I think at all I'm getting enlightened, all I need to do is sit with my daughter for a half an hour in the morning when she doesn't want to get up and go to school to bring me back to some groundedness.
Yeah.
Oh, I still got some work to do.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Something. Or, you know, just notice that I'm just this human being trying to make her way through life, you know. And the reason why I wanted to share that is because, you know, we do this work and then we start to set impossible standards for ourselves.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
Yeah. We must be enlightened. We must act like an enlightened.
Exactly. Especially if you're the one offering services. You know, I have to show up like this all the time.
Yeah.
And my daughter has said to me, she's a great teacher for me. She's you're kind of negative. And I'm like, how can I be negative? I'm the one teaching people. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So she is my teacher, and spending every morning with her and really putting the work into practice, getting out of her business, you know, just being there, not trying to change her. It just brings me home all the time.
It sounds so humbling.
That's what it is.
And difficult.
And difficult.
Yeah.
Raising teenagers, right?
Yeah, mine's 12, so he is almost there, but he's a teenager in the making.
Yes. Well, and they are a delight. I actually do love my teenagers. My goodness, they show me so much. You know, but I have to get out of my own way in order to see it. So every morning I get an opportunity to practice that.
Fantastic. And that sets the stage.
Right.
That's a great way to start the day, because it is very humbling. And then, you're starting it with the work.
It's right.
So, yeah.
Well, and then what I do love, I have partners. And so after I drop her off at the bus, there's two or three times a week that I come home and I get onto Skype or I get on the phone and I work with people all over the world.
Fantastic. That is so cool. Yeah, I'm going to the work, which we've talked about, and I'm so excited for that partner. Yeah, the support, the networking, the connection.
Yeah. Yes, being in a room of 200 people who are working through all the same stuff that you are. One of the biggest things that showed me, because there's people from all over the world that go there, is that we are all thinking the same things.
Yes.
Which really showed me, these thoughts aren't mine. I got real possessive over them. But when we're all saying things like have you ever heard anyone else say, it feels like I'm not good enough? Oh, yeah, great. Exactly. So it's kind of like a virus, some of these thoughts, you know? Like, that's why when I question them, when I sit with you and you sit in that, I'm not good enough, is that true? I kind of have this feeling that we're contributing to the global letting go of that thought a little bit at a time, you know?
Well, the greatest connector is me too.
Right.
That, and it's whenever we say, oh, not me, that is disconnection. So I get it. And it's something, I haven't gone to school for the work, but I love the work, and I integrate it, and it has improved my relationship, in particular, my most personal, intimate relationship, like a millionfold. I can't even begin to describe it. And just understanding that to connect, I must identify. I must not shy away from or say, see something in them and think, oh, that's not me. I'm not that.
Well, that's been my experience with my husband. You know, for 20 years, I had a story about him. And little by little, as I started to question those thoughts, I actually started to get to know him, it felt like, for the first time.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. You get to fall in love all over again.
You get to fall in love all over again. Yeah. And he transforms before my eyes. And that's, I did get a little twisted up in that for a while, which was I heard that message. And so I kind of did the work with an agenda to change him. Okay, if I'm going to be this way, that means he'll react differently.
Right.
And it really is not ever, ever about fixing anyone or anything in your life. Ever. You change, and it's not even about wanting to change, but it just seems to happen. Your perspective changes. You can't help but see the world differently. And so the same situation, just look at what happened with your son, with the thought he was this child who was bottling up his emotions, who couldn't handle it, without the thought he's okay. Besides what we're thinking and believing about this child who's crying, he is okay. He's processing.
I honestly, I'm so excited to see him again, and I feel like I just got a free session. So,
yay. I love
it. Next, what are you currently learning personally?
Well, because I am all about the work, Katie has a new book out.
I've read it.
You read it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
So, A Mind at Home with Itself, and I'm in a study group. So, so I'm in a group of people. I told you about that immersion program.
Yes.
I'm part of, so Tanya Ferreira. She's out of Vancouver, and she's hosting a study group, and so we meet every other week, and then we talk in between, and so just really immersing in that book, because it's deceivingly simple. Yes, of course.
Yes.
Right? And so it's the Diamond Sutra, her husband, Stephen Mitchell, translates the Diamond Sutra and then brings the work into it. And just something, you know, simple where she talks about generosity. You know, if we take these concepts in with our mind, we just think, oh yeah, okay, I get generosity. But I notice how I cut myself off from generosity, for instance, you know, if I believe I need appreciation for it. And if I really sit with the act of generosity, if I give to somebody, if I give that to me as well, I don't need appreciation. I don't need a thank you. I just truly don't. If someone gives it, it's lovely, but I don't need it. If I believe I need it, then I'm cutting myself off from that. And so her book invites you to really sit in awareness of that. And so I could see myself, I was listening to it on Audible again, I could see myself skimming through and go, oh yeah, that makes sense, oh yeah. And I knew I wanted to get deeper. So I went into the study group.
Okay, so I like that way better than my way, which is listening to the same thing 10 times.
Oh!
No, it's great. However, I skip. I skip that, and I love the idea of a study group. What a great tool and opportunity to connect with others and have that valuable conversation.
Yes. Yeah, and we end up questioning things as a group. I do love circles. You know, I like one-on-one work.
Yes.
I have partners, and I love offering one-on-one work. And my heart is in circles. Because when we're all talking and we're sharing, so if we're doing a group inquiry about how do I react when I believe that thought, and maybe we're all working different situations, but we're saying all the same things. For one thing, it's kind of like the Canada geese, you know, we've got the one at the front doing the hard work and everyone else is sort of, that's what it feels like, you know, like that one person maybe is doing some of the heavy lifting, but you are going right along with it.
And then it's your turn to switch up front.
Absolutely, you know, and So that group energy propelling us forward, I just love that.
Me too. Okay, thank you so much for sharing that.
Yes.
So last question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you offer service?
Mm-hmm. So as I was saying, that the way to keep the work in my life is by offering, particularly I like to offer workshops.
Yes.
So I have a weekly inquiry circle at Spruce Grove. Mm-hmm. There's a center out there called the Pro Biz Center. And so I do Tuesday nights, an inquiry circle. Come January, I'm going to be offering Tuesday mornings as well.
Cool.
And so we'll be actually changing it up a little bit. Right now I have it as sort of a drop-in scenario, but we'll be changing it up to four-week sessions,
mm-hmm.
Where we really, maybe six-week sessions, where we really work through a worksheet,
yeah.
So that you can come to there and really learn how to do the work and how to implement it into your life,
right.
As a practice. Because
mm-hmm.
I see the work as a practice, much like a yoga practice or something like that. Also, about January 20th, I should have had that date down, but we can
we'll
link
put it
to
in
it.
The notes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have a full day event coming up on at the Pure Vida Center, Yoga Center.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's in Spruce Grove?
No, this is in Edmonton.
That's in Edmonton.
On Stony Plain
yep.
Road, I think it is. So I'm collaborating with Jerry from Heart to Heart, and her and I are going to be offering a full day of the work, 9 till 4. It's an great experience to really sit in the work for a day.
Yes.
And then I have one-on-one sessions.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, one thing I am excited about is I offer something called workshops in a home.
Oh, okay.
So
we did talk about this a little bit.
Yes. So I do love it, and people seem to enjoy it too, because you go to a workshop, and you come home, and you want to talk to your friends and family, and they're like, that sounds weird. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So what I offer is somebody who wants to offer a workshop in the comfort of their own home. The homeowner doesn't pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
The participants pay $25 mm-hmm. for a two-hour session,
yeah.
And they get to invite their friends and family.
Oh, cool! It's like a party.
Yes, it's like it's kind of like a Tupperware party,
yeah,
except for the work.
Better.
But they get to start growing their community of people they can talk about this work with.
Oh my goodness!
Because the more I do this work, the less people I can talk about parenting and marriage things. Because people want to go into the old, my kid just won't pick up his toys,
yeah,
and my husband. And I'm just noticing, it's not actually to down them. I lived that.
Yeah.
I lived that for a long time. And I just find that as soon as I start doing that, I just find that it doesn't get me anywhere.
Yes.
And it doesn't even feel true anymore.
Right.
Because I can just hear right off the bat that it's not their job to make me happy.
Yeah.
You know? So I love to talk to people who are on the same kind of heart-centered path.
Yeah.
And so a workshop in the home is a great way to grow that for yourself.
Well, guess what? I'm going to be booking you for.
Yay!
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
It's so much fun.
Is it?
Yes, it's so nice. And it's intimate and, just kind and comforting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you really triggered something for me when you said, you know, that you can't always talk to the people in your life. Because I found that. And as somebody who's done a lot of different trainings and dabbled in a lot of different work, I have very few people I can talk to about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even yesterday I was doing some planning for a vision workshop course that I'm creating. And I really only felt like I could talk to one person because her and I are very connected on that plane. But the work, nobody. Like, I don't feel like there's, say for you, I don't feel like there's anybody else that I can talk to. So how powerful to draw your support network to you and to make this a living, breathing practice.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people don't get it because we have a whole culture set up around, you know, people being nice, people being considerate, all these rules we have for life. And they work for us, or they keep getting reinforced because everyone around us agrees with us. That's what's a little bit of a struggle when you start doing this work, is your mind is thinking, well, that's how I was raised.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I was raised.
And we don't know anything different.
We don't know.
And particularly in a group of girlfriends.
Yeah.
You know, you get into the gossiping and you kind of, there's complaining that comes with that. And it's really hard to change the conversation. So a lot of times what we end up doing is distancing ourselves from our friends. And that's so unfortunate when there's this other way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, and you know, I said there's less people to talk to about it. It's not that I can't connect with somebody who's not doing the work.
Yes.
Because as you said, I can connect to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just if I wanted to talk about, I'm struggling with my daughter.
Yes.
mostly I find venting just doesn't seem to do it for me anymore. Yeah. It doesn't really vent, it grows the pain. So actually, just like what you said about follow the feeling of, I think, freedom, yeah. peace, you know, yes. it's the same, like if you're noticing tension, mm-hmm. any kind of tension, that's a temple bell that you're mm-hmm. believing untrue. That not only are you believing something that's not true, but you're actually disconnecting from your essence. Yes. Any kind of tension,
wow.
that's your body telling you that you're disconnecting.
Wow. Yeah, that quote that you just... that we've been talking about is actually from the Buddha.
Ah.
So it has to do with, I'm going to totally paraphrase it, but, just as the ocean tastes of salt, tastes of freedom. And so, yeah, what you just said really brought it home, you know, that it's just, it tastes of freedom, and that tension gets released. Mm. And that's how you know it. You know you're on the right path.
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you so much,
yes,
Debbie.
Yes, my pleasure.
Yeah, it was fantastic chatting with you, and I'm going to share a whole bunch more of the information, links, and everything. So if you want to connect more with Debbie, you'll have no shortage of ways to do that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, easily I have a website, debbiebridge.ca. Yes.